Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It wasn't that long ago that selling marijuana for any reason and in any amount could get you locked up. But now, depending on where you live, not only is selling it legal, but it could be extremely profitable. But as with many big business opportunities, communities of color are often slow to catch on because of access to resources, information, funding, and other obstacles. But that's beginning to change along with attitudes about cannabis. Well, tonight, we're talking about how black businesses are moving into the cannabis space. My guests are Sharon Perry Thomas, Director of Social Impact at the Diasporic Alliance of Cannabis Opportunities, and Jamal Waith, owner of Bouquet Rolling Papers. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question about this issue. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sharon, Jamal, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I can't resist the temptation to say hi.
Yes. And we should. I'd rather be that than to be low anytime.
Yeah. All jokes aside, though, Sharon, let me first ask you, why is the cannabis business good for communities of color? There are some people who would say that the liquor business, as long as it has been legal, is not good for communities of color.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I can definitely understand that question considering the years of prohibition and just the attack on people in our community around the laws that were enacted to really penalize us and put us deeper into the criminal injustice system. And I see, you know, many of the opportunities in cannabis for our community. A lot of it comes out of the, one, working with a plant, I mean, we are an agrarian people and have always been, that's in our DNA, being able to work with a plant and nourish it and grow it and let it do for us what it needs. So when we look at the plant, cannabis, it is something that has been grown in this country for many years. It's a plant that can be used for everything from building materials to clothing, as well as medicine. And so when you look at this plant, it is definitely multifold and can be used in many ways. But I think we just sort of like focus on the one, and that's it. Another opportunity outside of working with the plant directly is the economic opportunity. Many of the folks who have entered this space, it hasn't been the easiest, but we have seen the money that has been made just recently over COVID. I mean, it hit for the first time a U.S. record of something like over $17 billion was made off of cannabis in this country. Just imagine what some of that money can do for us. As a matter of fact, Illinois is one of those areas, one of those states that has sort of started to try to work on that and figure that out. Many people don't know, but the first reparations bill is a bill that benefited from cannabis revenue in Evanston, Illinois, and they call it the first reparation bill. And in our community, we've been asking for reparations for many, many years and have not gotten this close. They were able to do it almost at a drop of a dime. I mean, I know it wasn't easy, but they got it done. And just about 2 weeks ago, I think that there was a community organization that was able to receive $2 million from revenue from cannabis. And so it's twofold in terms of really being able to help restore and repair our individual cells as well as our community. So in our lifetime, this is the reparations that we see so far, and many of us do see a lot of that coming out of what can be derived financially from the cannabis industry, and not just financially, but also on a social justice level. Just recently as well, New Jersey came on board as an adult use state, which means that you don't have to have a medical card to go in and actually buy cannabis. And they have been able to expunge just since July. So what are we in now? We're in September?
Yes.
Since July, over a third of all of their cases, convictions, marijuana convictions, have been expunged. Mm-hmm. And that's just been since July. And just imagine how long people have been working on being able to get their records expunged. And they've been able to do that because the legislation has started to change in there in New Jersey, and it's happening other places as well. Virginia is another one.
Let's for a moment put aside the social justice piece, and let's put aside the recreational grow your own piece.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
and talk specifically, Jamal, about cannabis and the peripheral businesses that, if you'll allow me, can sprout, grow from the... I'm on a roll today.
You are.
I hear that.
Yeah, I like words. That can grow from this business. So you own Bouquet Rolling Papers, and you've owned this business, this particular business, since 2017. What sparked this? What sparked this idea? Where did this idea come from? Because we do know, I mean, you don't have to use marijuana to know about rolling papers. You can, if you're a Southerner, and my family is, my great uncles, they rolled their own cigarettes, tobacco cigarettes. So rolling mm-hmm. papers have been around for a very, very long time. So, so what was it that brought about this idea specifically as it relates to the cannabis industry for you?
I think it was, to be one part completely honest, I am a part of a great team of people that made this even possible. But we were all friends, and we knew that there had to be better products out there. And to be quite honest, it was us wanting to be in the industry, but we knew we did not have the money, the capital. We didn't have the resources or anything to necessarily jump out there and to try to, do the cultivation or get a dispensary or something like that. But, the most basic level is people are smokers. They got to put that marijuana in something. So why not it be rolling papers, and why not it be a hip black owned company? We didn't have a lot. We were very grassroots. To be quite honest, I really have to thank Sharon, because she, DACA is a beautiful thing. We went our first year. We kind of just went to see what happened. We were vendors and everything. And it was just seeing that kind of gave us the move to sprout. But, I think it was just wanting to be a part of the industry and not really having the money to, jump out there as much as I would say counterparts, maybe.
And I think that's the piece that I was talking about at the very beginning of this. Like so many businesses for people of color, particularly, you know, new businesses, access to capital is often prohibitive for them. I remember when we were talking about this issue with the president and CEO of Anacostia Organics. We tried to get her on the program today. And that is a medical marijuana dispensary. And this was about 3 years ago. And I remember she said the startup cost 3 years ago was $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a full blown operation. And so even for a smaller operation, when you're talking about rolling papers, how much did it cost for you to start this small corner in the cannabis industry?
I would honestly say it was a hard number to really put on, because to start it, let's say under $2,000 necessarily.
So what did you spend it on?
That's just getting the, you know, getting your ideas, getting your product. To be quite honest, when we did the first National Cannabis Fest, we didn't even have product. We didn't have the rolling paper. Our actual product had not come in. The idea of what we wanted had not came in yet. And mm-hmm. it was really just, you know, we knew we were selling people really on us as individuals. This is what we're having. This is what we're going to, you know, be coming out with. Like, stay, be on the lookout, like that kind of stuff. And honestly, as we've built as we've grown, the company has gotten stronger and better. But trying to say, you know, really giving a hard figure, that would be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, can I just jump in and
please
say
do,
that
Sharon.
Was a nugget? Because one of the things that people don't understand in many communities is that there are so many other things that you can do in this industry.
Oh my God,
outside
yes.
of touching the plan, and that we call these call ancillary services. And so, case in point, I mean, your profession is in communication, creating podcasts, creating communication materials just based off of that, particularly for our community. People in our community are hungry for this information, and other people outside of our community are also hungry to reach our community. And so we're missing a lot of opportunities when we only say, I want to grow, or I want a dispensary. So that, you know, I hope people heard that and understood that you start where you are.
Hold on for 1 second, Jamal. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the business of cannabis in communities of color. How does it work? Are attitudes changing? Where are we when it comes to the marijuana business and all of the things that may come with it for communities of color? If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And one of the reasons that this issue has come up is because Black Cannabis Week is coming up, the business of cannabis. Talk to me a bit about that, Sharon.
Yeah, so Black Cannabis Week came out of COVID, really, because prior to that, we would have a conference in Philadelphia, Temple University, in the whole entire medical school, all three floors. We brought in professionals, entrepreneurs, and just everyday people who could learn and network and find out more about cannabis, because we know that in our community, the stigma is real and it's there. And so we really strive to bring doctors and educators and elected officials who look like us. Not to say that we excluded anybody else, but, you know, I remember one comment somebody gave me, and they said that this is like the Wakanda of cannabis. And you would almost have to be there to, like, know what that feeling was like, that you see all these people. Because most of the times when you go to conferences, you don't see, at least then, you didn't see that many people who looked like you. And so the cannabis, Black Cannabis Week is a week for us to educate, to celebrate and elevate Blacks in cannabis.
Hold that point, because I'll let you finish, but I believe you can find out more on blackcannabisweek.com. Is that correct?
Correct. Exactly.
Blackcannabisweek.com. We're going to talk more about that in just a bit right after the break. Cynthia from D.C., Toya from Virginia, we're going to talk to you as well as we talk about the business of cannabis in communities of color. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app, and on 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about how Black businesses are moving into the cannabis space. My guests are Sharon Perry Thomas, Director of Social Impact at the Diasporic Alliance for Cannabis Opportunities, and Jamal Waith, owner of Bouquet Rolling Papers. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to my guests, let me take a couple of phone calls here. Cynthia calling from D.C. Okay. Cynthia, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I first wanted to ask if one was interested in starting and cultivating. I heard us say about the Black Cannabis Week, but where did you go to get that information? One, that was one question. Two, if the cannabis business is such a broad and big business, when are they going to release or let go of the people who are doing time for such at one point, illegal drug?
You missed a part of that conversation, but I'll let Sharon recap that. Go right ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, absolutely, Cynthia. So one of the things that I said earlier that you probably missed, as many of these states come on board, particularly when it comes to adult use cannabis, they are starting to expunge the records of the people who have been incarcerated. And I know that on the federal level, there are people who are right now pushing Biden, including the Urban League, which now has really backed cannabis legalization licenses, and just to make sure that they reserve some of this industry for Black and brown communities. Because right now, it's almost like the tech industry, we are starting behind, and that's okay. We do have organizations like the National Urban League that are saying, like, wait, we need to make sure we set this aside right now. So those things are starting to happen. In terms of some of the organizations, there are a lot of professional organizations. I'm not sure where you're calling from, but I know
she's calling from
Minorities
DC.
For Medical Marijuana are also called MM is a national organization. You also have the Minority Cannabis Business Association, which is also a national organization. So between those two national organizations, you should be able to get the information and get in contact with the person you need to get in contact with in your state, in your city.
Okay.
And Cynthia, by the way, information about Black Cannabis Week will be on our website, as it is every night for every Daily Drum episode, every Daily Drum that we have Monday through Friday after 8:30, every show, the entire podcast. You'll hear yourself and you'll hear our guests every night after 8:30. So just click on, okay?
Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Toya calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Toya. What's on your mind?
Good evening to all. I'm just tapping into your conversation, and I just have a few questions. I think Cynthia asked the same question I'm about to ask, but they actually just passed a law for legalizing marijuana in the state of Virginia, and I was just trying to find out ways to start my own medical dispensary. So I just had a few questions as far as that, like how can I get into that type of work?
Sharon.
Right. I mean, this is a business just like any other business. So, one, doing your due diligence, making sure that all of the regulations that are in place, you're following those just like any other business. You want to create a team. You want to make sure you have the right accountant. You want to make sure you have the right attorney. You want to make sure you know, even all the way down to your assistant, you want to make sure you have the right people who are on your team, because, you know, for a lot of folks in that space who open dispensaries, it's definitely not a sprint. It is definitely a marathon, and it takes some effort. Besides those other two organizations that I mentioned, I know one of the groups in Virginia that has been doing a lot of work, because right now you can grow 5 plants in your house as of July the 1st. In Virginia, and that organization is called Marijuana Justice.
Marijuana Justice, okay.
Right, exactly, Marijuana Justice. So I would definitely tap into them as well as, like I said, some of the other organizations that I mentioned as well.
And I think one of the other things, Toya, since this is a very new issue in Virginia, but we can say that there have been some bumps in the road in the state of Maryland regarding licensing. And I think
and
that's one of the things that you are really going to have to pay a lot of attention to, not only legally, but politically. There was a lot of hullabaloo about that in Virginia for people of color and how many licenses for medical marijuana licensing for distribution or dispensaries that were going to be handed out. So you're really going to have to get on top of that issue and pay strict attention to it. And of course, mm-hmm. As we've been discussing, the funding of it is an issue, and I'm sure that, you know, both Sharon and Jamal can talk about this, because one of the things that has fascinated me about this, and this goes to the heart of communities of color. 60 Minutes years ago, when Colorado was really the first to legalize the, you know, fully legalize the selling of marijuana, just like somebody would sell liquor. And the amount of money that must be, the front money that must be put into this kind of business. And let's just be honest, communities of color, these kinds of funds were initially just out of reach, as well as I said in the beginning, information. And there were some impediments to it. And now we are seeing some pockets. For example, a couple of years ago, we had a guest in whose parents ran the only Black-owned marijuana dispensary in the state of Washington. And she said within a year, her parents had to quit their day jobs because the marijuana, recreational marijuana dispensary was so lucrative. In other words, they were making a lot of money.
A lot of money.
They were making a lot of money. But again, as Sharon was saying, this was a marathon. This was not a sprint. And there are all kinds of issues certainly that come up with it. And one of the biggest ones is the dealing with, what do you do with the money? Because the federal government still has not addressed, and talk about this if you can, Sharon, has addressed how you deal with the profits from marijuana sales.
Right. Right. And I will answer that. But before that, Cynthia, are you still there?
Toya is her name.
Toya, mm-hmm. Are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Yeah. And so let me ask you, what do you do right now in Virginia?
Well, right now I am in the healthcare field, and I also take care of my mom full time because my mom suffers from MS and lupus. So that's one of my main reasons for trying to get into medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I say to people like you who have that type of skill set is, how can you use that skill set in cannabis? Okay? Because caregivers are much needed in this industry. And guess what? I live in Pennsylvania. And so now our nursing, the people who work in a nursing home, they can become caregivers now. So it doesn't even have to be a family member. That's how it used to be. So now we probably will start having cannabis nursing homes.
And that's what I wanted to do, a cannabis it's not a group home, but a care home where people come and get treatment. And also they have the option of living there while getting treatment or living at home and just coming there to get their treatment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to sleep at night, that's what you need to think about.
Exactly. Don't reinvent the wheel. Do not reinvent the wheel. This is something that you do every day. You help people.
Yeah.
There's a easy lane for you to still continue to help people and then just add it into the cannabis industry. Like, that's the easiest thing to do. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I try to tell people is, you know, when they ask me, like, oh, man, well, I'm trying to do like you, or I'm trying to jump in, and it's like, yo, don't reinvent the wheel. What are you good at? Like, we're good at talking to people. We're good at interacting with folks. You know, we bring it to a very grassroots level. Like, you know us. We just happen to have a rolling paper company. You know what I'm saying? So I think you don't really want to go outside to try to change it. Don't think about trying to scale Everest when you don't even have a car. You can't leave to get on the airplane when you didn't buy the ticket. You know, like, start on that level that you're at, and I guarantee you, you can then get a fleet of nurses that are all caregivers, and then you all have a you know what I'm saying, like something like that. Like, go on what you're good at right now, and that'll be so much easier for you.
So are there places that help with funding for those type of things, or grants, or like
That's a non-plant touching business. I mean, so if you just happen to include that, I mean, you know, those patients who you're taking care of, those patients have their own cars. You're just a consultant in the industry, helping them, showing them how to use it. Again, I know the first thing people think when they think of cannabis is smoking. There are so many other ways that it can be used. I mean, you know, in ancient Kemet, they were using it a lot of different ways. And then there is also a Cannabis Nurses Association. There's all types of associations, and you need to find that. Jamal, I don't know if you heard Wanda James's interview, and she's one of the first people to have a dispensary, or first black people to have a dispensary. And she said that I've had plenty of companies, 11 to count. And she said, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And it's like having a dollar store, but everything is just cannabis. I was like, whoa. I wish I could just play that on a loudspeaker, because I know it looks good and I know it sounds good, but there are just so many other things, like I said, to do. And if you can just translate what you're already doing, just sprinkle a little cannabis on it, and you're good to go.
Toya, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate your input to this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Back, Sharon, to the other business question that I asked about about banking.
Right, yeah, and I know my congressman, Dwight Evans here in Pennsylvania, is one of those people that is supporting the safe banking Act, and part of what that would do is to really reschedule cannabis and allow it to operate and function like any other company. And so one of the things that it would allow is the FDA, something that most small business owners know and understand, but it would allow them to provide loans and grants to cannabis-related businesses.
Mm.
That's key.
And but I think the big issue is that, and you know what, when you make profit, is that in using, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the big issue is how you make your deposits of your profits, and the bigger debate is how cannabis profits may possibly be taxed federally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the bigger debates, because you have some pro people who will say, look, go ahead, allow them to be, and allow the banks to open up, allow you to tax them, allow cannabis products to be taxed federally. We could see a huge drop in the federal deficit, for example, because of attitudes. And cannabis use more broadly, and even more specifically, the use of of marijuana for those who use edibles, who smoke it, and the like. And then, of course, you still have others. And Jamal, I think you can really speak to this about the attitudes. What have you seen over the past, 5 months ago, since you started Bouquet Rolling Papers, about the change in the attitudes, and for example, in the District of Columbia, with the with the legalization of recreational marijuana, even in small amounts.
I think it's been so. You got to think. I just turned 40 in February.
Oh right? Yeah, so, I mean, it's all downhill from here.
Yeah, right. It's a slippery slope for me, right? So I've seen every aspect of this cannabis situation through the city. And I'm not going to lie, I'm still at amazement sometimes when I'm like walking or I'm in the city somewhere and someone is smoking and the police don't, arrest them or harass or something. Because in the back of my mind, I'm looking for the Cops theme song to start playing, because I know it's going to be something, right? And it's not. It's more. It's definitely a more relaxed thing. But I think it's until one of the biggest things that we do for our brand, we try to end the stigma and just change the way the face of cannabis looks.
What do you mean by that?
Normalizing it, honestly, and being able to talk to being able to talk to people, and when you're in this industry, you realize that there's so many people that all look the same, but we don't realize that, right? Like there might be someone that smokes, and I think, like, I hate to keep saying it, going to Sharman's event in Philly really opened our eyes because it's everyone. They literally have everyone there. It's the people that just come off the street and they don't know what the heck is going on, but they like, hey, it's some folks in here. They want to know about it, and then they draw them in. Those the professionals. So you see every aspect of life. You see everyone, and that's one thing that they all have in common. And I think the normalizing it is starting to see those faces, because it's a big blur, honestly, looking at it. And in the grand scheme of things, the person that's not in the industry, it all looks like just one big green blur. But what we're now doing is starting to single out faces, and we're showing those people, and we're being able to listen to the stories of those people. And it really looks really normal. I mean, it's your friend. It's your grandma. It's your mom. It's, it's your frat brother. It's something like that. Like, and the normalization is really what we need.
Not my frat brothers, but.
I mean, you said not your frat brothers. I'm not even going to go into that. I'm pretty sure. You know what? I do know what it is. I know what it is. I'm not doing this with you tonight.
All jokes aside, I think that you're right when recreational marijuana in the District of Columbia became, legal. And it just seemed to me that two things, and something that you just said. Driving home on New York Avenue, heading to Maryland, heading to Baltimore, you could get a contact high driving down Florida Avenue to New York Avenue. If your windows are down, you could definitely smell it. Where 10 years ago, that kind of thing didn't happen. And I also think that if you look at what is happening more broadly, not just in the District of Columbia, but just on social media, on social media, where you are finding people that you would have never suspected are using, and I'm not talking about some of the more peripheral uses of I'm not talking about hemp rope. I'm not talking about I'm talking about people who are using recreational marijuana. Mm-hmm. When I'm talking about if you went to a party 5 years ago, somebody says, "Do you want a drink?" But now if you go to a party, "Do you want a drink? Do you want an edible?" Mm-hmm. And I think that in some cases those attitudes are beginning to change. On the other side, however, and this is one of the things that we are still struggling with, and I think Jamal, you could you're more familiar with this in the District of Columbia, and maybe more peripherally, Sharon, in Philadelphia, we are still struggling with a crime issue surrounding the use of marijuana here in the district, the illicit drug use or the illicit drug sale. And that is something that the Metropolitan Police Department, Jamal, is still struggling with, because that also, there's another piece of that deadly gun violence and the like. So you've got the folks who are recreationally using it, those people who are doing it legally, who may be growing it at home legally, who may be finding ways to use edibles, or people who are using, bouquet rolling papers. But then you still have that other element, Jamal, that are causing problems in quality of life in our communities.
I will be 1,000% honest with you when I say I think that we have this gray area because of the legislation that we have, because we did not, we say it's recreational, right? So mm-hmm. we say, yeah, cannabis is recreational. There's no dispensaries,
right,
that you can recreationally go and buy cannabis, right?
Just have the medical stuff in the district,
right? So you have to be a medical patient, and there are, I don't even believe that the medical patient is program is up and running in the city right now. It just changed agencies. So, it's made in a way for this wild, wild west like kind of situation, if we're being honest. And until that legislation is changed and until those rules are changed, we're kind of gonna be in that gray area, which I really hate, because that's what it is. Like I hate when people call me. And it's like, I tell people, I don't sell weed, bro. Like, I can't help you with that. You need rolling papers. I got you, right? Mm-hmm. So if you come to the city and you're looking for weed, I really don't know what to tell you, because it ain't nowhere. Like, it's nowhere for you to legally purchase. And I tell people that there's no place where you can legally purchase weed that a legal dispensary necessarily. But we have I initiative 71 places. And, you know, those are the places that you can go. But then it's, you know, it's do you feel safe necessarily in those places? So, you know, it's, until the legislation is changed, and maybe it won't necessarily be changed, but I believe it's we do have something that I heard was supposed to be coming down the pike. So I would like to see that as well. But, you know, until we have that different change in legislation, we'll be setting ourselves up for failure.
Sharon, beyond, I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, and that's really where a lot of community input is needed. So for me personally, my concern for our community is safety. We just lost, not the cannabis, but the fentanyl, one of our greatest actors. Why is it? And not just cannabis, but really all of the drugs, which is actually what is starting to happen, is that they're starting to decriminalize them, and not only decriminalize them, but legalize them, giving people places and choices of how to use. And I've been in Vancouver where a whole strip mall, there was safe access for people to consume and to use any drug that they wanted. I didn't see people hitting anybody. I didn't see people looking slouchy. I didn't see people begging for anything, because one of the reasons is that it was acceptable. So when we have these things like, you know, stigma or, oh, that's bad, or those are those bad people, then those bad people just only become badder people. And what many of the young people are using now, they're not using cannabis coming straight out the ground. they're using other things that concerns me. And so in a regulated market, meaning where you have a place where you can actually purchase these products, that's where that safety comes in. So now you are securing my safety, just like we go in a supermarket.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to buy food or anything just like off the street in an open can. No, there are certain regulations that the FDA has put in place for our safety. And the same thing really has to extend to this cannabis industry. We need for our community to be safe. And on that point of people use it recreationally, I personally don't see a difference between those people and those people who have very, very serious medical conditions. Because as a Black person, many of us are still suffering from having the DNA of enslaved Africans. We are still traumatized. And so if that's what it takes for you to be a normal person, or for you not to be screaming at somebody or cutting somebody's head, then yes, it's a plant medicine. And it had been used as a medicine prior to the 1920s, before Prohibition, which only really made it illegal because of Black people, and a way to incarcerate and put more Black people into their penal system. Other than that, we would still have a thriving industry that would be doing a lot for the United States. And again, here we go again, racism. And that's what Prohibition leads back to. And we have to start looking at that.
Yeah. Jamal, I'll let you have a final word on having more Black people move into the cannabis business space?
I think it would be a great thing. Like we have all said in the beginning, being able to see people that look like us, that is a huge thing. I hope that COVID leaves so we can have some more really good in-person. I love going to Philly.
Sirius XM, Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington, D.C., a part of the Howard University Radio Network.
Definitely is always open to just ask those questions. Like, don't be scared to ask the questions. I think that's the biggest thing as well, to jump out there, to really get out there, because whatever you have a skill, we, you know, us melanated people, we have an untapped skill that we do not use sometimes, and I feel like, you know, we can do anything. Use that skill, tap into it, reach out, and just try to make it, because you have a skill that you're using now that the cannabis industry can benefit in.
Sharon Perry Thomas and Jamal Waith, thank you both for talking to us. And as we said, the information about Black Cannabis Week will be on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 tonight. So thank you both so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, September 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.